Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. We're glad you're here. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're streaming live all over the world on biz1190.com. We will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com, and we're glad you're here. I just got back from Russia. You know, I never thought I ever wanted to go to Russia, but nonetheless, having been there, I would return. It's a beautiful country, very nice people there. But one very surprising thing about being in Russia, at least to me, was their general optimism they have about their country, just people you talk to. And remember, they've emerged from a very dark period, and they talk pretty openly about that, about, they'll say, back doing this during the Soviet times, this or that. I can remember several years ago being in the day room in the Air Force Base in Dover, Delaware, when the Eagle landed on the moon. And we all jumped up and cheered, and I was really young and naive at that time, to be honest about it, but I really thought the United States could do just about anything back in those days. And that's a general feeling I sort of got from talking to the folks in Russia, and my fear is that we as a country might be losing that psychological edge as we see publicized failure after failure of our government and other institutions. But now, fortunately, when I talk to small business people, in general, they're an optimistic bunch, and most of us have the attitude about we're going to be successful anyhow. Speaking of optimism, our guest today is Dr. Alfie Meek. Dr. Meek is the director of the Innovation Strategy and Impact Team with Georgia Tech's Enterprise Innovation Institute. Now, prior to coming to Georgia Tech, Alfie was with Gwinnett County, where he oversaw the country's economic, the counties, I should say, economic development program, as well as forecasting and research efforts. And we're going to talk to him about that and about some of his successes there with bringing a Fortune 500 business to Atlanta. Alfie, we're glad you're here. Thanks for being on Driven to Business.
Happy to be here, Eddie. Thanks a lot.
Alfie, you're the director of the Innovation Strategy and Impact Team with Georgia Tech's Enterprise Innovation Institute. I have a hard time saying that.
Yeah.
So, being as I have a hard time saying it, tell us what that's about.
Right. So, I'm the director of the name of my group is the Innovation Strategy and Impact Team, and I work for the Enterprise Innovation Institute. A lot of innovation going on there. What my group does specifically is we work with communities around the state to help them put together strategic plans and economic development. We help them do labor force analysis. We do a lot of economic and fiscal impact analysis. Right now, we're just wrapped up doing some tax digest forecasting for DeKalb County. I used to do the tax digest forecast for Gwinnett County. So we help them do a lot of economic impact, fiscal impact analysis. Fiscal impact analysis would be, I'm going to bring NCR to my community. What's that going to do in terms of new revenues? But also, what's it going to do in terms of new costs? A lot of communities don't look at the costs. So we've developed techniques and models to do that. So we just help communities do that kind of work.
You know, speaking of NCR, we could talk about that for a moment. You actually were very instrumental in bringing that Fortune 500 company to Georgia. For those of us that probably have no idea how you go about doing that,
right?
Can you maybe just walk us through that process a bit? How do you do that?
Well, first, let me just clarify. You're being a little too kind when you say I was instrumental in bringing NCR to the state. Let me tell you how this works in Georgia, typically. And every state's different, but in Georgia, a company sort of decides we're going to move, and Georgia's one of our targets. We may locate to Georgia, we may look at other places. In Georgia, they typically go to the State Department of Economic Development. That's where you start, especially a company like NCR. They're going to start at the state level because the governor's going to be involved in that transaction. There's no question about that. And then the state says, what are some of your needs? And then they look around at different communities, and then they'll pick some communities they think fit the company's needs. And we were fortunate enough to be one of the communities that they looked at. One of the reasons was we had a long-standing NCR facility already in Gwinnett County. They had been there a long time there. They were familiar with the area. And so we got a chance to take to talk to them there. But it really, a project that size, yeah, does the local community have to put something on the table, have skin in the game, as the state likes to say? Yeah, we have to put something on the table. But with a project that size, that's mostly driven at the state level with state sorts of incentives and state negotiation.
it makes a huge difference, though, doesn't it, in a community like that? In several ways. It's not only the direct employment that a company like that brings, it's the service companies like me that service people like that.
Absolutely. You know, I can't – it's hard to describe what having NCR in Gwinnett County has done for that economy. And I've been doing economic development, for a long time. I worked at Tech in the late 90s doing economic development, similar to what I do now. I worked at UGA. I was at Gwinnett for 9 years doing it on the ground. And I've seen a lot of companies come and go, but I tell people all the time, I'll never forget the morning I walked out to my driveway and picked up the Gwinnett Daily Post and saw a picture of all the people lined up around the arena at the Gwinnett Center for the job fair NCR was holding and said, you know, that's why we do what we do, you know, and it's been huge.
That is awesome. You know, we're really very blessed here in Georgia. Depending on who you read, we're always ranked in the top 10 of places to own and start and manage a business. And I think sometimes perhaps a lot of us that run businesses here inside the state, we get perhaps a bit forgetful of that, about what that's like. Alpha, you may not know this. I own a business in upstate New York and in Pennsylvania as well. Great people up there. Wonderful people that work for us up there. And great people in those states. We certainly enjoy doing business up there. But their state governments are not as helpful or as perhaps a term to use is they're not as friendly, at least not openly friendly toward business as the Georgia state government is.
In what way specifically?
Well, in ways of just putting administrative burdens in front of you that perhaps you really don't know, are not very qualified to deal with, having things like without getting into detail, having a state agency come in and basically threaten to fine you for doing things you didn't even know were wrong, and your employees were happy the way you were doing it, and they come in and say, no, you have to do it this way, and it doesn't matter what your employees like, this is the way we do it here, and the fact and I was pointing out to them that all the other businesses around me up there were doing the same thing that I was doing, and they said, well, that's too bad that everyone doesn't know the law. Now, I'm not saying that couldn't happen here in Georgia, and a lot of us, you know, in business, I guess it's fair to say, even here in Georgia, we have a bit of a love-hate relationship with the government. You know, we love them on one hand until somebody shows up at your door to make you do something you don't want to do. But I do very much appreciate the idea that guys like you are working with communities to help the community be prosperous, which in turn helps businesses, small businesses like us, to service and not only that, but just to help the general community economy where a business is able to operate inside that economy. Alfie, you and I talked a moment earlier before we went on the air about the Enterprise Innovation Institute. And honestly, for a completely non-academic type like me, I go to that website and it reads kind of like what you would expect a website at a university to read. It's very good and just, you know, bigger words than I use. But in reality, you guys have had some very concrete developments, accomplishments there. Tell us about a little bit about that.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about Georgia Tech's EI Squared. We call it EI Squared, the Enterprise Enterprise. It's a lot easier to say EI Squared over and over than Enterprise Innovation Institute.
Exactly.
We're the primary business outreach and economic development organization for Georgia Tech. Last time I looked at it, we were one of the biggest economic outreach organizations at Georgia Tech. And we focus on commercialization, entrepreneurship, helping existing businesses connect with technologies throughout the state. We have about 16 programs that through which we do this, through commercialization. A lot of technologies are developed on campus. We help professors commercialize those. We run what's called the MEP program, Manufacturing Extension Partnership, which helps manufacturers get access to some of the research and stuff going on at Georgia Tech. We have ATDC, which is one of the nation's longest-running business incubators, help small businesses get started up. So, you know, we do a whole lot of things at Georgia Tech and the Enterprise Innovation Institute to help manufacturers and businesses all across the state get into lean manufacturing, just all sorts of things. And then, of course, my group is sort of the anomaly there where we're actually working with communities on the local government side.
One of your current projects that I found very interesting is that you are educating elected officials and business leaders about what you term the essential economy. Now, I find that an interesting term, and I did look it up. But just for the folks listening that may not have any idea what that means, what is that about?
Right. Well, let me just clarify. We were hired by a group called the Essential Economy Council to try to quantify the size of what they called the essential economy. And what they saw as the essential economy is that sector of the economy that is made up of laborers, you know, people who don't need, you know, any formal education for their job. They're not thought workers. There's no kind of certification needed. It's just it's really just the manual labor. They wanted to try to quantify the size of that. So they asked us to do it, and I won't bore you with all the techniques and the statistical work and the analysis and data we did. But at the end of the day, the number of people who have a job that fell into that category, you know, no credential necessary, work with your hands, not your mind sort of jobs,
right,
was about one out of every four jobs in the state.
Wow.
Which that surprised me. It didn't surprise them, but it really surprised me.
Was along those lines, and I guess related to it, but if you looked over to the part of the workforce that my company employs, mm-hmm, which is a skilled labor, not necessarily with a certification or license, but skilled, it's interesting in a way that to me that a highly rated technical institute like Georgia Tech would be talking to people about the importance of basically low skill, non-degreed, at least I should say, workers in an economy. How did you or did you, when you guys decided to get involved with the essential economy folks, I would think that as busy as you guys are, you've got to weigh these things as to what is right and isn't important. What was your thought process?
My group is a little unique, again, okay, within the Enterprise Innovation Institute. I really am a contract research group. While I'm a state employee and I work for the university, my job is to go out and generate. I have to generate what's called soft money contracts. I get a little state money, and I have to leverage that. So I go out and compete with private sector firms sometimes. I have to charge full overhead rates, just like a. And this was just a project that we went out to get that they were looking. The Central Economy Council went out and put out some bids for proposal, and we said, hey, you know what? We think we've got some unique ways that we can do that, and that's what we went after.
Alfie, thank you. You are listening to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with Dr. Alfie Meek with Georgia Tech, and we'll be back in just a moment. Stick around. Welcome back to this edition of Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield, who may not have the best radio voice in the world, but has a face suited for radio, and I'm glad you're here. We're talking with Dr. Alfie Meek, who is the director of the Innovation Strategy and Impact Team within Georgia Tech's Enterprise Innovation Institute, or EI Squared, as he calls it. Alfie, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the idea of having of some research you had done on the essential economy, which was a group you guys had worked for, which basically defines low. I hate to use the term low skill because I don't mean to right, imply these people aren't skilled. It's just they don't have degrees or licenses or
right. In fact, some of them are quite skilled. I mean, they could be a brick mason
right,
fall into the category.
Exactly.
I mean, so some of these are quite skilled jobs. They just The way they defined it, again, as I mentioned, is that there was no sort of degree requirement or certification requirement, and it was more of a work with your hands than work with your mind kind of job. That's really the way we classified it. And you working with them, we went through all the occupation codes that they felt fell into that category, and then we just did some, and again, I won't bore you with the details, but some interesting research to identify not only how many people that represented in the Georgia workforce, but the amount of income it represented, the amount of tax revenues it represented, and it was substantial. It was much bigger than I expected it to be.
Right. I think you had mentioned it's almost 25%
yeah,
of the population,
okay,
of the working population.
Yeah.
Alfie, I moved here in 1988 to Georgia from Texas for the sole reason of starting a business. And I was the director of marketing at the company I was with in Texas, and so I had access to a lot of marketing information about businesses. And for the kind of business that I wanted to start, Georgia, in Atlanta in particular, was one of the top four in the country. And of the other three, my wife said she wouldn't move there. So that decision was made to come to Georgia. But, you know, Georgia's been in the business news again recently here as being a one of the best places in the country to operate a business. You work with communities that, in fact, are trying to attract business. Just give us your thoughts on that.
No, well, I agree. And I'm guessing that your wife didn't want to go to the other three, and a lot of them may have had to do with the climate.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, sure. Yes. So, I mean, you know, all of the great stuff we can talk about Georgia, and we'll talk about that in a second. The fact of the matter is we have a fantastic climate here. The weather here is great.
We do.
It's not hard to attract people from the upper Midwest or the Northeast to come do business in Georgia. Even if the climate wasn't there, you have the cost of living, much lower cost of living here. We mentioned in the first segment about the lower regulation. The regulatory environment's very different here than it is other places. It's just a very tax-friendly state, and we continue to try to tweak the code in Georgia to make it even more so. The way we tax income in Georgia is very different than a lot of places. It's just we're doing our best. We listen to businesses, and we try to meet their needs and structure it in such a way that it'd be an attractive place to do business.
You know, I think what a lot of us in business, I was sort of kidding you a little bit earlier about we have a love-hate relationship with business, but I think what most of us want in business is that the community governments provide us a decent environment. Let's keep the roads good.
Right.
You know, keep the sewers working, keep all that stuff going on, and don't be unfriendly toward business,
right.
Which, I mean, I think there's some areas of the country where business people actually feel like that the governments are unfriendly to them, and they almost treat them as their enemies or something. And a lot of us are take some offense at that. Now, I realize I'm talking to a PhD from Georgia Tech, but that aside, I have reached a conclusion, along with many of my other business owner buddies, that there are many times that trade schools offer a better alternative for a lot of young people than traditional colleges. I'll tell you also that I have talked about this with a number of young people. A person coming out of a trade school nowadays in the particular economy we're in right now, depending on what degree you have from a four-year degree college, but if you came out with a good trade school degree and worked in the field a little bit, your income potential could rival that of somebody coming out of college for a lot less cost of education. And again, I know I'm talking to a guy that's part and parcel of a large university.
Sure.
But what's your thoughts about that?
No, I absolutely agree. I mean, there's no question.
You don't have to agree.
No, I know I don't have to agree. But and people who know me know that I don't always agree. But in this situation, I absolutely agree with you. You know, when I was in Gwinnett County, we have Gwinnett Tech out there. Great school.
Right.
I had some great programs. And you know, I know I think the automotive program, you could go through that program and walk out and get a job at one of the Mercedes dealer up there or something, making really good money. Much better than I think some people coming out of a typical 4-year college. You know, I think in general, we are a little over-colleged in this country. You know, right now, I know we don't have the best economy, but let me give you a couple statistics. Right now, about half of the recent college graduates, if they have a job, are working in a job that doesn't require a college degree.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll give you
another statistic. We have more student loan debt in this country than we do credit card debt. Okay. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think we've sold this bill of goods to people that they have to go to college. And you're right. I work for a university. I'm in the education business. But it's not something everyone needs to do. And trade schools are an absolutely great alternative for many people.
I'm glad to hear you say that. Yeah, I think even in the community that I grew up in, that I live in now, when kids coming out of high school, unfortunately, there is almost there's a social pressure on them to go to a university. I mean, there's a social pressure, and guys that instead say, I'm going to go to a trade school or something, they're almost, I think they may feel disdained in a bit, although that may not really happen, but I'm just saying
they
are.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
But, you know, I've read, there's a couple of books, one that comes to mind immediately is The Millionaire Next Door and some of these kind of books. You know, there's an interesting stat that if you track education and income up to about $100,000, they track. When you get above, now this is, these are old stats, and I know you're a guy that lives in stats and I don't, so above about 100 grand, that curve starts to diverge a bit, and as you get to the very wealthy people that are that have over a seven-figure income, one of the most underrepresented groups there are people with graduate degrees. They're not there. These are guys.
Right.
I'm thinking about the fact that Bill Gates never finished college.
Nope.
Now he's Bill Gates is not a normal person, but he didn't finish college there at all. And you know, Alfie, what I've told a number of kids that I've had a chance to talk to them is give them the idea of, you know, and I use the example of a plumber or anything, and I know that's not that romantic of a profession, but you know, if you were to come out and be a good plumber, or maybe we could use automotive technician, and you get to be really good at that,
yeah,
and you go to work somewhere and you'll make pretty good money right off the bat. But you know, even if you have higher ambitions, you can get to be good at it. You can open your own business doing that if you're good at it. Hire and train other people to work for you, and at that point, your income potential is as high as a lawyer or anybody else at that point. It's up there, and if you're the kind of person who enjoys that kind of work, you're also looking at probably a better work environment and enjoyment than what other folks get out of that.
No, I agree wholeheartedly.
Well, anyway, I am always, as I told you before the program, I'm always hesitant to. I have a 4-year degree from college, and so I certainly don't knock that. And I think, and we're going to talk a little later, I think we need more engineers and so forth in the, which is what Georgia Tech is, of course, great at doing. We're lacking with that here in the United States. But I just don't. I always do try to tell folks listening, if you've got kids that are coming out of high school, don't be disdainful of a trade school. Look and see what that child really wants to do and what he's skilled at doing, and you can make a very nice life for yourself by doing that. You are listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We are podcasting on eddiemayfield.com. We are streaming live on biz1190.com. We'll be back. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with Dr. Alfie Meek with the Georgia Tech, the head of the director of the Innovation Strategy and Impact Team with Georgia Tech's Enterprise Innovation Institute, or as he refers to it, quite understandably, as EI squared. Alfie, I think a lot of us in Georgia have been surprised at the impact of the port than Savannah. Have you been involved at all of that?
No, not much. I haven't. But, of course, being in economic development in Georgia since the mid-90s, you know, it doesn't take long for you to figure out real fast that port and access to the port is a tremendous asset for the state. Not just the state, all the communities in the state.
Right.
You know, you can get to that port from anywhere in the state in a relatively short amount of time. And this idea now of deepening that port, along with the expansion of the Panama Canal, is just going to be a huge economic boom for the state.
I think people may not understand how big of a change it is already. My family, every year, we drive down to Hilton Head for over Labor Day. We called our kids, named it Family Camp years ago, so now there's a bunch of us, and we all go down there. But over the past few years, the traffic on I-16 there has increased dramatically with the number of container trucks going down there to that port. And I know when we were talking with the governor here on Driven to Business a few months ago, he was telling us that container port is either the largest or one of the largest container ports on the East Coast. I think it's the largest in terms of traffic on the East Coast. And with the expansion of that, and also there's a little in our business, we're at EMA, we're involved a fair amount in the oil and gas business all over the country. And They've applied for a license down there to build a liquefied natural gas export facility down there, which, again, is the coming – I think it's the biggest boom to hit the United States in the next 15 years is going to be the export of natural gas, which we export none right now. But I think the Port of Savannah is going to play a role in that. And even in our business, we import equipment from some other countries. It's very convenient to have it come in on a container there at the Port of Savannah and then have it hauled up to us. It's a very convenient thing. It's a very cost-effective thing. Mm-hmm. And again, with the expansion of the Panama Canal to handle larger ships that can come in there with a deepening, it's very strategic. And I think, again, just has a lot to do with why Georgia is a good business state. We're thinking about those kinds of things.
It's clearly a part of it. That's true. Let's be fair, though. You mentioned the big downside, right? A lot more containers means a lot more trucks on the road.
And
that's,
oh, yeah.
That's something that the state's going to have to deal with.
Annoying.
Yeah. Those of us who deal with economic development, that's one of the criticisms sometimes, especially the metro areas, all the traffic. And so there's good and there's bad, and you have to be able to adapt.
It is that. However, when traffic right at the probably the worst part of the economic downturn here in Atlanta was when traffic had sort of gotten to be at its best, and I don't think we want it at that cost.
No, I'd rather have the economic.
That's not the way to have it.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
I mentioned already I moved here in Georgia in 1988 to found a business. One of the things that I was surprised about when I got here, I just didn't know this, and I was raised in Alabama, so I don't know why I didn't know this.
I'm sorry.
Easy. I don't pull for the university. I'm a graduate of the University of Alabama in Birmingham.
Okay.
And I've had a bunch of kids go to the University of Georgia, so people ask me what I pull for, I tell them I pull for where I've spent the money.
There you go.
Which is over. But one thing I really did not know about was that North Georgia had mountains. I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And when we first moved here, every Sunday after church, I would just get in the car, and until I just wore my wife and kids out with it, I would just go up there, and we have a cabin up there now, and I just love going up there. I was up there this last week looking at the beautiful colors in the fall here. I still don't think many other people in other parts of the country have any idea what North Georgia has, but I know your group has also been very involved in tourism in Georgia. Tell us about that.
In the past, my group was a little more involved in tourism than we have been recently. That we've kind of gotten off that focus of late, but I will talk about one thing we're doing in tourism. But let me just step back. You're right. I mean, North Georgia, it's a gorgeous place. We have a cabin there, too, and it's been in our family since the 50s, and it's a beautiful asset. You could be in Atlanta and then just, you could either be at the coast in a couple hours or you could be in the mountains in a couple hours. I mean, it's a great selling point. With respect to tourism, where we're involved in the state in tourism right now, you may not be familiar. There's a new tax credit. It's called the tourism. I'm not exactly sure what we call it, the tourism TIF, but I think it's a tourism tax credit. Basically, if you develop a large tourism attraction that employs a certain number of people and more than 25% of your visitors are going to come from outside the state, you can actually get a credit on your sales tax that you generate. They will give the sales tax back to you up to a certain limit to help finance the capital side of your project. That's a relatively new tourism incentive in Georgia. And the law says that you have to have an independent consultant has to work for the state to do a verification on the economic and fiscal impact and verify some of the numbers. And Georgia Tech, my group at Georgia Tech, has been involved in doing that. We've been identified as the independent consultant for the state, and we've built some state fiscal models, and we're doing that. So we're going to be getting back into tourism in that regard, helping the state review and analyze these types of projects for this tourism TIF. But you're right. It's not just North Georgia. I mean, North Georgia is beautiful, but there's tourism attractions all over this state. I had the opportunity in my job to travel to places on this state that I'm sure you've never heard of. And I go out of my way now. In the last year and a half, I've gone out of my way not to ever get on an expressway. And when you drive from Decatur, Georgia, which is where I'm at, down to Richmond Hill, which is south of Savannah, and you don't ever get on an expressway, you see some beautiful, amazing places. And there's a lot of neat places in this state.
I have a reputation within my family of doing that. I'm glad to hear that someone besides me does that, because I like to explore the back roads as well. You know, though, it is interesting in a way, though. You talked about when we talked about why businesses would come to Georgia, and one of the things you said was climate, which is something we don't all think about so much, but it's sort of the soft side of business. It's not tax incentives. It's not educated workforce and all that, all of which plays into it, but it's the soft side of it. Really, I think the proximity to both beaches and mountains around here, again, it's a soft side of things, but it makes people want to live here. in the area. It's a very beautiful state, and I certainly agree with that.
I agree.
After Georgia Tech is one of the most prestigious engineering schools in the world. I want to read you a comment from a USA Today and get your feedback on this. Despite America's knack for ingenuity, the forces of change face some heavy crosswinds. A wheezing economy, a dearth of college engineering students, sagging high school math and science scores, and sinking research and development investments have heightened the concerns about the USA's ability to compete with rising powers like China and India. How can the U.S. maintain its edge or keep pace when India and China graduate nearly 1 million engineering students annually compared with 120,000 in the U.S.? How do you take that?
It's going to be tough. I mean, there's no way to deny that. You know, I heard a statistic that I've heard quoted several times. China has more honor students than we have students.
Wow.
Right. So, you know, you start thinking about that and you talk about the 1 million engineering students compared with ours, it's going to be tough. And then you see our math and science grades and achievement continue to drop. We're not going to be able to compete. The only way I think we've been able to compete so far is that we do still have this mentality of thinking outside the box and being innovative. I mean, you're right. They have 1 million engineering students. We have 120. But we still engineered the iPhone, right? I mean, we still,
right.
you know, that can,
right.
we still think outside the box and
that's
that kind of innovation.
That's a great
right?
point.
So, but eventually the numbers are just going to overwhelm you. There's no question. You know, one of the things that we export in this country is educational services. The best students from China and India come here
right.
to get educated. And then what happens? They go back. You know, I don't want to get into, you can get into all sorts of, you know, rabbit trails, talking about immigration and things like that. But to be perfectly honest, a great thing we could do in this country to help keep some of this talent here is if you come over here and you get a 4-year degree in engineering or some sort of math and science degree, when you walk across the stage, you get a diploma and a green card. Try to keep that talent here instead of sending it back. Because you're right. In the not too distant future, if we don't make a change, we're not going to be able to compete.
I agree with that 100%. In fact, I think one of the criticism that someone like me would have of current immigration policy is that it's heavily leans toward unskilled labor. And I think the idea of having more engineers from all over the world is what we do, in fact, need coming in here. And if for whatever reason, demographics, birth rates, whatever, if we're not able to do it, I mean, there's going to come a point at some point when you can't. And I do... That is a great point you make, because I've heard that made before about that we may be lagging behind in everything, but we still innovate everything here. We are the most innovative country on earth, and I think that is something we really cannot lose. I think I mentioned earlier that when we put a man on the moon, and you know, it is surprising to think about that is so long ago now, but and how little, what has changed in the world in terms of technology since then. Like, you know, we're walking around with iPhones now, as you mentioned, that have more computing power than they had on that spacecraft that went to the moon. It's an amazing thing to think about. But just the idea of rising to challenges and doing it. And I mentioned earlier, I was recently in St. Petersburg in Moscow, and there's just sort of a hustle there. And it you know, we used to think America could do nearly anything, but I'm in some ways, have we lost that attitude, do you think?
Yeah, I think we have. I would have to agree. I think we have. I don't think that we instill in our students that idea of, you know, reach for the stars, you know, really go out there and be innovative. I don't think we do that anymore. I don't have any statistics to point to that, which is something in my business. I always have statistics to back up what I say. So that's really a gut feeling, but I absolutely have to agree.
I prefer when I'm talking to people to just say things and make them prove them wrong. That's the way I
there
work.
You go. Well, I can't prove you wrong, and I agree with you. So,
well, anyway, I this is something I don't want to be overly pessimistic here on Driven to Business. We generally are optimistic about business and about things as we do, but just the idea that here in this country we have got to recapture that. What do you want to call it, the American spirit, or whatever you want to call it, that we can accomplish things. Mm-hmm. That we're a country that came back from World War II. And, you know, had the greatest generation come back from the horror of that and go to college and basically go to the moon is what they did.
That's right.
And we some of the most innovative businesses on this planet have, and some of the most good for humanity on this planet, in many other ways, have come out of our culture. And I do think we need to continually preach that and get back to it. And I'm hoping we have not lost that, and that we're able to recapture that. You are listening to Driven to Business. One more segment to go, so don't go away. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. Before we leave the technical stuff and go to talking about you, Alfie, in person a little bit, while you were at Gwinnett County, you developed a revenue forecasting model that's been widely used there to help the county do planning. I have to tell you, I would know nothing about that. I always tell people that, bean counters can take the fun out of funding real fast, as far as I'm concerned. But can you give us a simple explanation for a guy like me as to how do you do that?
No, but I can give you a complicated statistical. No, basically we just do, and again, unfortunately, I got to use big words here, right? But we build econometric or statistical models to help us do the forecasting, and we would forecast different line items in the budget and different line items in the digest. And without going into a lot of boring detail on the statistics involved, yeah, that's one of the things we do is help communities do the statistical forecasting.
And you're still doing that now, right, for other?
We do, actually. Yeah. I just finished doing one for DeKalb County here in Metro Atlanta. We did a digest forecast for them.
Alf, you've had an interesting career and a very successful career. So tell us about you. How did you get started? How did you get into this?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I started at Georgia Tech as a when you have to fill out the application, you have to check some box. And I checked industrial engineering in the box.
All right.
So I started interviewing for co-op jobs my first semester there and realized after the second interview, I wanted nothing to do with industrial engineering. And I liked economics in high school and said, I'll change to economics. And so my father asked me, what in the world are you going to do with that? And I said, well, I'm going to be an economist. What else? And it worked out that way. I started at IBM. And I don't know if you have time, but I'll tell you a quick story. In 1980, the IBM PC came out, and my dad's an accountant, and he bought an IBM PC, and they had Lotus 1-2-3. That's what you use when you bought your first PC.
I remember those days.
Right. And I won't tell you how old I was, but I was young at the time. And he said, well, you're going to have to learn to use this for every hour of games you play. You've got to learn to use Lotus for an hour. Before I knew it, I was doing homework in Lotus. I was doing everything in Lotus. So when I was 18, I actually interviewed for IBM, and they needed someone who was a Lotus expert. And I started working for IBM, building forecasting models when I was 18 years old in Lotus. And it just took off from there. I went to work for SunTrust Bank. Some people say right place, right time. And that's a lot of the trick sometimes, making yourself available and being in the right place. And was wrapping up a degree in economics and had been doing some work down in the basement in the accounts payable department, and got on an elevator one day and with a vice president, and she had seen me and knew my work and said, you're getting a degree in economics. I said, yes. She goes, I know there's a position coming up in the bank's economist office. Would you like to interview for that? And I said, I sure would. And that was the end of that. Ever since then, I've been an economist. I worked for SunTrust Bank and then went on to work for Georgia Tech, worked for UGA, worked for Gwinnett for 9 years, and now I'm back at Georgia Tech. So, and all those, I've had the opportunity to do what I love, which is economics.
When I got started in the business that I'm in now, I was working for I always joke around and say two Texas millionaires. They actually weren't millionaires when I was there. They were by the time I left. So I take full credit for that, for them getting there. But that sort of took me under the wing and said, we want you to help us. After being employed there a while, they pulled me in and said, we want you to help us run our growing business. And they gave me a chance, really, to step up in some leadership positions. And I'm really very grateful to them for doing that. They taught me a lot of things that I still use to this very day about how to run a business, how to look for opportunities, how to do things like that. And they taught me that. And so that mentoring part of that, I've tried to do that in my career is to help other people along and just give them a hand up, and not only that, but give them, don't be overly advice to them, but give them a bit of advice and some help along the way. Is there anyone in your past that helped you that way? You mentioned
your dad. I won't go into names, but I've had the fortunate opportunity to have some great managers who really, have taught me a lot about what I do, about the way to manage people. I tell you something else, and this is why I'm not going to name names or companies, because I've had some really, really bad ones.
I agree.
You know?
Me too.
And you know, while you can, I learned really good technical skills from some of those really bad ones, because they were very good technically at their work. But the human aspect, I learned what I didn't want to be. You know, when I finally got to the position where I am now, where I manage people and manage a group. You know, and it was interesting you said what you said, because my personal philosophy is, you know, I try to hire the best people I can, and I try to pour all my skills and replicate right. them into them. You know, if I do my job well, and a lot of people don't agree with this, but if I do my job well, I make myself irrelevant. You know, one day when I step off the curb and get hit by the truck, I don't want there to be a blip in the unit that I manage. They should be able to carry on if I've done my job right. And I think that's what I try to do, and I hope that's what I've done.
You know, I think one of the most enjoyable things and the most rewarding things that you can do in leadership positions is when you see other people that you sort and not, and you can't, we don't take credit for all of it. I mean, other people help them, but that you had a hand at least in giving them a hand or giving them a little push in the right way or helping them along the way. I think that's that is such a rewarding thing to look back on that. And, you know, we've had, even inside our company, we've had guys that started with us in the warehouse when they were 18 years old, and now they hold leadership positions inside our company. And it's certainly not all my doing by any, and I would never be so arrogant as to even think that. But I did have a hand in it, and it's very rewarding to see that and to see them be successful in what they do and know that you even just had a bit of a play in it. And I think that's something that people in business and leadership really should take some thought about when you're managing people, and it's not just crushing somebody with your thumb or
right. No, I agree. You know, one of the biggest compliments I continue to be given in my professional career, and this happened every job where I've had meant to manage people, is that other groups and other organizations, other groups within the organization come and take my people away. You know, they hire my people for right. bigger and better jobs other places in the organization. Now, that means I have to go out again and hire some more people. But that is a huge compliment that I've gotten great people. We've trained them to the point, and now they're ready to move on. You know, maybe in my organization, there's nowhere for them to move up. So let's move them to another part of the organization where they can continue to achieve. It's a great compliment. And unfortunately, it happens all the time. And I'm always having to get new people. But
you're right. It is a compliment.
It is.
It absolutely is. Is there anything, Alf, is there anything in your career choices that you would do given the I always tell people hindsight is very clear and also pretty useless because it's already passed.
Yeah. You know, it's funny when I thought about that, and this, I don't want this to sound arrogant either, but not really. You know, and my experience has been that I've made myself available. I've tried to look for opportunities, and doors just have opened, and I've gone through them, and other doors have closed, and things have been clear, and my career path has been, there's no regrets. I think it's been great.
I think in my life, I think the idea of only thing I would do differently, I think, is I would be a little more kind to some employees than I was years ago. I was a little more hard driven than I am now, and I thought I had to be. It's just sort of self taught in that regard. And
well, I thought the question was more about, you know, decisions I had made about, you know, which direction I've gone. Certainly, there may be some regrets like that. I think that's a good one. I could think of a couple of employees I probably could have treated a little better in my past.
But, I think all of us have. Let me ask you this. What's important to you? How do you want to be remembered? How does Alfie Meek want to be remembered?
That's a great question. You know, I'm not that concerned about anyone remembering me as a good economist, a good researcher.
Right.
You know, if I'm concerned at all about my professional life and the way I'm remembered, it would be what we've just talked about. Someone who was a good boss and tried to make the people that worked for him better and replicated his skills in them. I'm more interested in being remembered just as a man of integrity, someone whose walk mimicked what he said. You know, I've taken jobs and made job changes so I could be closer to home, so I could have lunch with my family, so I could do stuff with my family. I've made career decisions to take jobs where I don't travel because my family's important. And that's really what I'm going to be remembered by. If I remember someone who worked, who wanted to be there for his family and had integrity, I'm a happy guy.
You know, Alfie, that's a great answer. It's so interesting that every successful person I talk to and I ask that question, they have almost the same answer, which does tell us all that life is not about business success when it's all over. It's about who you are as a person and relationships with your family, with God, and with your family. And you've been listening to Driven to Business. We're glad you're here. We've had a great guest. Alfie, thank you for being here. We'll see you again next week on Driven to Business.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.